Good morning, and welcome to the AP1000 conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Please note, this event is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Jim Warren. Please go ahead.
Morning and welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name's Jim Warren. I'm Executive Director of N.C. Warren. We're a Durham, North Carolina-based watchdog group and have been around since the late 1980s. We're here today to announce the release of a new report by Fairwinds Associates and Chief Engineer Arne Gundersen regarding, and it's called Fukushima and the Westinghouse Toshiba 1000. It's a report that was commissioned by N.C. Warren and Friends of the Earth. The Fairwinds report expands on problems identified by a federal Fukushima task force in the U.S., and it will be filed today by the public interest groups with NRC commissioners. In a legal motion accompanying the report, we will insist that federal regulations require correction of the AP1000's many problems during the design certification phase, not after full construction begins on projects in Georgia and South Carolina. We contend that the NRC staff has avoided resolving the earlier problems, along with the others identified by the Fukushima Task Force, which said that many of these problems do indeed apply to new reactors, but that the NRC has avoided resolving them in order to meet the nuclear power industry's AP1000 construction schedule. Right now, as background, you may know the commissioners are considering a final vote on the design certification without having responded to a long list of problems raised earlier by experts within and outside the industry. Today's report and the legal motion will be live at ncwarren.org right about at this time. I'm going to turn it over in a moment here to Chief Engineer Arne Gundersen, and following him, Attorney John Runkel will say a few words, and Tom Clements of the Friends of the Earth will also make some brief comments. One note that I want to make really clear, the NRC staff in charge of the AP1000 review and the NRC's public relations people have successfully misled members of the media and the public in claiming that the Fukushima Task Force has okayed the new reactors for licensing. But as Arne's report shows, multiple task force recommendations are directly applicable to the AP1000 design, and they must be evaluated. And finally, I'll just say that the NRC Commission will be legally negligent if it certifies the AP1000 without a thorough analysis of the critical issues we've raised, and it'll be a shame if a federal court has to order the NRC to protect public safety and to protect the ratepayers in Georgia and South Carolina and other states from design corrections that are attempted after construction begins when those corrections would be far costlier. So, again, I'm going to turn it over to Arne Gundersen. He is Chief Engineer of Fairwinds Associates. He is a former nuclear industry senior vice president, and he's been a prominent and insightful an analyst of the Fukushima accident since it began in March. Arne?
Yeah, thank you, John, and thanks for everybody on the call. Just to get two spellings right, Gundersen is with an E-S-E-N, and Fairwinds has an E in the middle, F-A-I-R-E-W-I-N-D-S. The Fairwinds report will be up on the fairwinds.com website at 10:30. And as John already mentioned, he'll have it up on the N.C. Warren website as well. In addition, on the Fairwinds website, there'll be two other reports. One relates to the containment problems, which were identified by the AP1000 group already, and the second has to do with issues with the turbine hull, and I'll briefly touch on those as part of the call. Okay, well, John mentioned that there was a that the NRC had a near-term task force to evaluate Fukushima modifications, and there have definitely been identified problems on new reactors as well as the existing fleet in that task force. And the task force actually recommended through a SECI document, SECI is SECY-11-0137. In that document, they clearly said that these modifications needed to be evaluated, not just for the operating reactors, but for the new reactors. And my concern is that I'm sure you all know that back in 1972, the NRC looked the other way on the Mark I reactor containment, which is what happened to Fukushima. They knew there were problems and licensed it anyway. And I just don't want history to repeat itself by knowing there's problems with the AP1000 and licensing it anyway. The report is lengthy, and I'll try to hold my comments down to 10 minutes. The report has a couple of areas that are significant concerns. The first is that the AP1000 containment is designed for 59 pounds of pressure. And the accident calculations show that the accident as presently analyzed is 58.3 pounds of pressure. So there's only 7-tenths of a pound of pressure between what the containment can withstand and what they believe will be produced after an accident. So the margins are already incredibly small. 59 pounds, by the way, is about the pressure in a bicycle tire. So we're going into this situation with a containment that's right at the hairy edge of its design maximum pressure already. Now, Mr. Runkle and I met with the NRC last year, back in the summer of 2010, to talk about containment problems. And I got the impression then that the train had already left the station, that the NRC had already made up its mind that the AP1000 was going to be licensed, despite the fact that Mr. Runkle and I brought in a lot of great data supporting the fact that there were flaws in the containment on the AP1000. Well, after that, of course, we had Fukushima, and the NRC assumed that the containments never leaked. They actually said that, and of course, Fukushima showed us that containments obviously do leak. Well, what that has to do with this AP1000 design in light of Fukushima is this. There's extra heat loads that the NRC has not assumed that would raise the pressure inside the containment to over its design value. And those extra heat loads relate to something called an inadvertent criticality. Now, there's been several inadvertent criticalities at Fukushima. Basically, that means that the reactor turns itself back on without any human intervention. And when that happens, extra heat gets in the containment, which, of course, raises the pressure. And this containment's on the hairy edge of its design maximum anyway. Related to that is something called the loss of ultimate heat sink, loss of the ultimate heat sink. Fukushima, there was a tsunami, and, of course, the NRC's position is that the tsunami wiped out the diesels, which it did. But even if the diesels were 50 feet higher, there still would have been a meltdown at Fukushima because of something called the loss of the ultimate heat sink. The tsunami knocked out the pumps right along the water's edge. And those pumps were what cooled the diesels and what cooled the nuclear reactor. So even if the diesels had been capable of running, they would have been starved for cooling water and would have shut down anyway, and the reactor cores would have melted down anyway. Well, the NRC recognizes that loss of the ultimate heat sink is a problem on operating reactors, but isn't looking at it for this AP1000. The AP1000's ultimate heat sink is a huge, it's 6 million pound tank on the roof of the containment. And the plan is that after an accident, valves open and let the 6 million pounds of water drizzle over top of the containment like a waterfall, and that will cool the nuclear reactor. So the question is, can a loss of the ultimate heat sink happen at the AP1000? The NRC has assumed that the probability of that happening is zero, despite the fact that it happened on Fukushima. Now, what could cause that tank to rupture? The NRC has not evaluated that tank for airplane impact. It has not evaluated that tank for a terrorist attack, despite the fact that it's the most prominent feature on the site and the most easily targeted. Related to that is, at Vogtle and at Sharon Harris, there are other reactors on the site. I'm sorry, at VC Summer, rather. There are other reactors on the site. And an explosion like we had at Fukushima would throw shrapnel into the AP1000 tank and could drain the tank when, obviously, there was a better need for the water. So there's several other scenarios in the report, but this losing the cooling tank at the top of the reactor is a major concern. Also related to that is that the spent fuel pool on the AP1000 is cooled just like every other reactor in the country. And, of course, we know that at Fukushima 4, the containment, the spent fuel pool created so much hydrogen that it blew the building up. Yet the NRC is giving a blank check to this AP1000 design. I'm going to digress for a minute here. The net effect of these blank checks, it is so much easier to change a drawing on a computer with the stroke of a pen than it is after the fact to modify a design after you've already poured the concrete and have the pipes in and the roof on and things like that. A $10 modification on a computer right now can easily save $10 million in a modification down the road if the plant is constructed. So I know Mr. Warren said that this is about cost as well. As modifications get rolled into the AP1000 design, the net effect is the cost to the ratepayers is going to go up. And as I said, it's a $10 stroke of the pen on a computer-aided design keyboard versus a $10 million modification if you have to rip out concrete and do it over. Okay, back to the things that the AP1000 group identified is shared sites, like Vogtle, like VC Summer. A problem at one reactor can impact the other. I already talked about the shrapnel, but there are other problems. If you'll remember the huge cloud of debris that was thrown airborne in both the Unit 1 and Unit 3 explosions at Fukushima, if that debris entered AP1000, it would clog the air vents and make it unable to cool itself. It would also clog something called a squib valve, which is the thing that creates the waterfall. And the plant has not been analyzed for that. So what we're asking is for the NRC to go back and look at all these things. While it's easy with the stroke of a pen to change the design as opposed to after the fact, ripping out walls and pipe. The other thing we looked at was the containment design itself. And, of course, this has been a concern of Fairwinds for well over 2 years now, and there's a report about the containment design of the AP1000 on the site. That containment, as I said before, is only 0.7 of a pound of pressure between what they expect and its design maximum. The Fukushima containments, the NRC assumes there's zero chance of a containment failing, and of course, 3 out of 3 failed at Fukushima. But more importantly, the Fukushima Unit 3 exploded with something called a detonation shockwave. The AP1000 containment can't withstand a detonation shockwave. And so it's critical to make sure that there's no way that a detonation shockwave can occur at an AP1000. Because if one did, the containment would shatter. Another area which is related is that just about 2 weeks ago, Mr. Runkel filed a report with the NRC that discusses the fact that we had been in contact with an AP1000 whistleblower. And the turbine building, according to this whistleblower, was actually designed for the AP600. And the AP1000 is of course 40% bigger. But Westinghouse, Toshiba, and the people at Vogel and VC Summer never changed the turbine building to affect this larger design. Now, what that means is that things are shoehorned in where, in fact, in the original design, there would be plenty of room. And that adds operational complexity and operational costs further down the road. So the net effect of all of these issues is that, you know, Fairwinds is recommending that the NRC take a break and take a look at the Fukushima mods before this AP1000 starts into heavy safety-related construction, because we're convinced that there's other safety-related issues that for $10 can be fixed now, but it's going to cost $10 million in a year or two when they finally say, whoops, we made a mistake, and try to reflect that in the analysis. I think in interest of time and to get to questions, I'll stop and head over to back to Mr. Warren.
Thank you. That's Arne Gunderson, chief engineer of Fairwinds Associates and the lead author of the new report, Fukushima and the Westinghouse Toshiba AP1000. I want to add one quick note to what Arne said about the turbine building whistleblower report. It sounds like they are already having to make changes during the construction of that building down at that plant, and that's something we have asked for more information on from the Georgia Project Monitor, and it'll be interesting to see, because it sounds like it's already a very expensive correction that may well be underway. I want to introduce attorney John Runkel now. He is an attorney for NC Warren and representing the AP1000 Oversight Group too. John?
Good morning. My name is John Runkel. I'm an environmental attorney in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, counsel for the AP1000 Oversight Group. The Oversight Group is a coalition of organizations, local, regional, and national, concerned about the safety and cost of the proposed Westinghouse Toshiba AP1000 nuclear reactors. Today, we're filing a petition with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission criticizing the NRC staff for arbitrarily cutting off its review of important and still unanswered safety issues regarding the AP1000 reactors. Both the Atomic Energy Act and the National Environmental Policy Act require the Commission to take a hard look at new information. We found no compelling reason for the staff to stop its review of new issues, many of which stem from the Fukushima lessons learned, but others from the flawed AP1000 design itself. The NRC policy since 1991 is to resolve safety problems during the certification process and not during construction. What is troublesome to us now is that the NRC seems poised on certifying reactor designs that have not been fully reviewed, with many safety issues still unresolved. If licenses are issued to Plant Vogel or the Summer reactors based on this faulty design, design flaws will need to be corrected during construction. Costs to redesign the plant and change orders will add billions of dollars to the overall construction cost of these reactors. It's only in Georgia and South Carolina, with their full baseload recovery, their QIP provisions, that allow these utilities to go ahead with nuclear projects. A couple years ago, Moody's called nuclear construction a bet-the-farm proposition. The Southern Company and Skinner are not betting their own farm, but the farms of their ratepayers. The review and revisions of the AP1000 design have been going on for more than a decade, and several significant safety issues are still not resolved. We cannot wait until plants are halfway built to correct fundamental problems. That is not reasonable and prudent under any circumstances, and given the provisions of the Atomic Energy Act and NEPA, it is not lawful for the NRC to do so. There should be no rush to approve nuclear reactors until we know the design adequately protects public health and safety. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. That's John Runkel, attorney from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I want to introduce Tom Clements now. He is Southeastern Nuclear Campaign Coordinator for Friends of the Earth, and he's a longtime ally, and he's been a tireless watchdog of nuclear activities throughout the Southeast and beyond, and particularly involving the AP1000 project at the VC Summer plant in South Carolina. Tom?
Yes, thanks very much, Jim. Good morning. My name is Tom Clements, and I am the Southeastern Nuclear Campaign Coordinator with Friends of the Earth. I live in Columbia, South Carolina, near to the two leading AP1000 projects, approximately 25 miles south of the South Carolina Electric and Gas VC Summer site, and 80 miles east of the Southern Company's Vogtle project. My organization has intervened on both the state and NRC levels in the SCE&G project. We find the work of Fairwinds Associates to be of great importance in underscoring a host of problems with the AP1000 reactor's design and the NRC's review of that design, especially in light of the legal requirements just pointed out by John Runkle for the NRC to address Fukushima Task Force recommendations before the AP1000 reactor can be certified. In both Georgia and South Carolina, the utilities ignored the cheapest, lowest cost options, energy efficiency and conservation, before pushing forward with the costly reactor projects. Given the biased regulatory environment in both states, which essentially does the bidding of the utilities, the Public Service Commission's approved the AP1000 projects under new construction work and progress laws, as John just mentioned. Now we are already paying for the reactors in advance, even though no licenses from the NRC have been garnered. SCE&G customers were hit at the end of October with the fourth rate increase to pay for the reactors, and ratepayers in Georgia likewise have started seeing their bills go up. And it is only because of those anti-consumer QIP laws in Georgia and South Carolina that the projects are proceeding. Though no construction licenses have been issued and the AP1000 is not certified, great activity has taken place at both the Vogtle and VC Summer sites, and I have toured the Vogtle site, but not the VC Summer site. Such construction is taking place under a so-called limited work authorization from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and this limited work authorization appears to be simply a way to make an end run around requirements to have a license before construction can begin. For example, the reactor containment vessels at both sites are already being welded together, though it's hard to imagine how the NRC could allow such safety-related work to proceed with no license and given Fukushima Task Force recommendations. Over $1 billion has already been spent by SCE&G on their project, and the figure is likely similar for Vogtle. The holes have been dug for the reactors, and the companies are champing at the bit to receive their construction and operating licenses from the NRC in order to begin placing rebar and pouring concrete for the reactors themselves. The construction schedules of Southern Company and SCE&G are the main drivers for this project, not public health and safety considerations or Fukushima lessons learned related to the design of the AP1000. The companies have taken great risks by proceeding so far in construction and component purchase with no licenses for the individual projects or the AP1000 design. But there's clear understanding by the companies that circumstances could delay or halt the projects as well as the AP1000 certification. Thus, the expectation of receipt from the NRC of combined operating licenses at the end of this year or early next year may well prove to be incorrect, and certainly incorrect if this heads to federal court. Finally, as a ratepayer, it's clear that cost increases, including cost to modify the AP1000 design after construction has started, will simply be passed on to us ratepayers. Ratepayers and the PSC in both South Carolina and Georgia should be wary of the very real threat of cost increases associated with design changes after certification is taking place, and should demand that the Fukushima Task Force recommendations be taken into account now by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and that the design be finished before any certification is even considered. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Tom Clements of Friends of the Earth, and we will now open the press conference up for any questions.
We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. And the first question is from Brian Wingfield of Bloomberg. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing this call. I just was wondering if you can provide some context around the legal challenges and what you expect to be the timeline going forward for the next several months.
John, I'll let you field that one.
Well, the NRC staff has signed off on the AP 1000. We think that's it was done fairly capriciously. Right now, the full commission is looking at that package and all the comments, and they will be looking at our petition today. So we figure that they will probably be making some decision over the next several months on whether to certify the design. Then there's a 60-day, if they do certify the design, there's a 60-day period to put it in the Federal Register, and then they can look at, you know, licensing either the Vogel or the Summer Plan or both. We are urging the commission to do the lawful thing, is send it back until these issues are resolved. We don't see any compelling reasons to, you know, why there should be, why the design should be certified. But we've amassed a legal team around the country and other organizations. And, I mean, if they do, if they don't do the right thing, then we're going to have to take it to court.
Thanks.
Thank you, John.
Our next question is from Peter Baer of Climate Wire.
Good morning. Just to be clear, I haven't had a chance to read the documents on the site today, but taking the four risks that you mentioned, the risk that debris clogs the air vents, that debris could block the squib valve, that the containment pressure standard is inadequate, and that a Fukushima-level explosion could shatter the water reservoir. In each case, is the problem that these, in your view, have not been analyzed at all, or have not been analyzed satisfactorily? Could you just kind of run through those four?
Yeah, this is Arne Gunderson. The NRC has not analyzed any of the AP 1000 issues in
those four. Those four particular ones. They've not looked at any of those issues.
Correct. Those four particular ones have not been analyzed at all by the NRC.
I thought they did look at the question of the open exterior shield and decided that was not a risk. They've not.
There's the
debris issue. I thought they had looked at the debris issue.
There's a shield building around the containment building, and between the two is an annular gap that creates an airflow. At the top of the shield building are a series of little, like, eyebrow slits, and you can see that on a picture we have posted on the website. They have not evaluated Fukushima debris clouds clogging those slits. Way back years ago, they looked at the possibility of birds nesting in the slits and wasps building.
So what's missing is the evaluation of the big debris cloud?
Yes, correct. That is not in there. Related to that, and it's in the report, but for brevity, I didn't put it in here. You have a metal containment inside of this concrete shield building. The metal containment is assumed to be a smooth, clean surface to get the appropriate heat transfer across it. And as the debris cloud gets drawn into the containment, because this thing breathes, you know, it takes in the outside air, runs it across the containment and up the roof all the time. It's not like they turn that on and off. What they turn on and off is the rain water that falls down inside. But anyway, the breathing of this unit will cause the debris cloud to be brought into that annular gap. And the concern is clogging the annular gap or lying on the metal surface and changing the heat transfer coefficients as well. So all of the debris cloud issues from Fukushima have not been evaluated on the AP1000 design.
And then quickly, how about the containment pressure issue and the risk to the water reservoir from a Fukushima-type explosion? They've not looked at those two things either?
That's correct. Neither the containment pressure, inadvertent criticality, or debris from the from an adjacent unit puncturing the shield tank. None of those have been looked at yet, and all of them can be analyzed. I mean, we're talking about maybe 6 to 10 months worth of work by all the parties to analyze those issues. This is not a monumental effort, but it certainly would be appropriate before we go down the road. You know, for instance, if the containment proves to be not strong enough, the time to fix that containment is before you've actually put it onto the foundation. Now, that hasn't happened yet. So the lowest cost alternative is to analyze this thing for half a year or so and determine where these fixes have to be applied before you wind up, you know, burying them in concrete and then have to take them out to fix it.
Great. Thank you. Arnie, I would just add, I think, Pete, that the Fukushima inadvertent recriticality was only acknowledged less than 2 weeks ago. There had been some indications earlier, but it's pretty clear that NRC has not looked at that option. Other questions?
Can I just chime in there? There's actually, through Freedom of Information, we've gotten a hold of NRC emails, and internal to the NRC, they have been very concerned about inadvertent criticalities, and those emails have just reflect the internal concern. But of course, the front that the NRC poses to the public is that everything's under control. The internal emails are in conflict with that.
Other questions?
Yes, the next question is from Curtis Morgan of the Miami Herald.
Yeah, hi, folks. I wonder if you could sort of elaborate a little bit on the legal steps here. I mean, there are some times when you file a petition with, like, EPA or state environmental regulators, the filing of a petition or the filing of a lawsuit will essentially halt the process, I mean, until those legal issues are resolved. I mean, what are the obligations of the NRC in terms of responding to a petition like that? Do they have a timeline? Does it hold things? And also, I just want to clarify, if they don't take up this petition, you're prepared to sue to block the licensing?
This is John Runkle. Our petition that we're filing today is really to get them to do the right thing. And instead of certifying to design, sending it back for further review and analysis. The legal action really takes place if they go ahead and certify the design. Then you have to go to a federal court to get an injunction to stop them acting on it. If they go ahead and certify, if they issue licenses for the reactors, those can be challenged also in federal court because you can't issue a license to something that doesn't have all the safety issues resolved yet. There's no automatic stays in this like there is in some of the state courts. You'd have to ask a judge for an injunction.
Okay. But, I mean, just the filing of the petition, are they under any time obligation to deal? Do they have 15 days, 30 days, or anything to deal with this? You talked about 60 days, but that was public comment for the...
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there anything that they... Do they have to take up this petition? That's what I'm trying to clarify.
No. They do not have to do anything on a petition. In fact, the NRC staff has ignored a couple different supplemental comments and similar petitions after their date of June 30th. As new information has arisen, new problems have arisen, some from whistleblowers and some other things, we've raised the issue and called some petitions and called some comments.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Wayne Barber of Power Daily.
Hi. Thank you all again for holding this call. Just to clarify some processed stuff here, I'm taking you all do expect a final ruling on the AP 1000 design from the NRC within the next 3 or 4 months. And after the design is approved, the design has to be approved before the final COL is issued for these two nuclear reactors, correct?
This is John Runkle, yes.
And can you say if you all end up challenging either the design or the combined license for these two nuclear plants, what federal court would that challenge likely be filed in? Can you say?
Well, some of the challenges might be in the D.C. circuit, and others in the local Georgia or South Carolina circuits. It really depends on how it plays out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think your initial premise that we expect them to certify the design, I think that's really up in the air. I mean, if they mm-hmm. do both the reasonable thing and the lawful thing, they're going to have to send it back down. But in the real world, they probably will certify it. You know, that's what the pressure they're having right now is to do. So.
And if I can shoehorn in one final thing for either Mr. Runkle or Mr. Clemens, what is traditionally the dividing line on what sort of work can be done at the site before they get the final new plant construction license? I think the dividing line is supposed to be safety-related stuff, but how is that supposed to be defined?
Well, this is Tom Clements in Columbia, South Carolina. That's defined under a limited work authorization definition, which you could find on the NRC's website. And I'm not a lawyer, but my review of that, it's really rather vague what's allowed and what's not. I was really shocked to find out in presentations by SC&G a couple of months ago and more recently by Georgia Power, and you can see photos online of at least the Georgia Power situation, Southern Company, where they're actually welding together the 1.75-inch containment vessel. It's being welded on site, but not in the hole into which the concrete would be poured. It's a safety-related piece of equipment, and it's really rather shocking that the breadth of limited work authorization by the NRC allows that. And I think that there needs to be reconsideration of what is allowed on the site. But both of the sites, they're hundreds of acres, just scraped clean, the holes are dug, the buildings are constructed to erect the components in a vertical fashion, and other things are being done, like pouring the base of the cooling towers. So I think that the limited work authorizations have gone way too far in allowing what could be done at the sites. I think there's some legal questions there, but at this point we don't intend to challenge that.
Yeah, and I would add, Wayne, we could send you some of those photos if you would like, or others as well. There are many, many plates in that containment structure, and you can see they are in process of welding those together.
And just to add that there has been a threat and a filing from a Southern Company that if they didn't get the COL issued, which depends on the AP1000 certification, they would go for a second limited work authorization called the LWAB, which would essentially allow them to proceed to building the reactor, the base of the reactors themselves, if the COL wasn't issued immediately. So they were trying to get around the requirement to have a construction and operating license. And there was a filing by the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy and others to protest the petition by Southern Company that they be allowed to in-run the COL process, and I haven't heard back what's happened with that, but we could get you a copy of that if you wanted the petition that was filed by the Turner Environmental Law Clinic.
Yeah.
other questions?
That would be great. Thanks.
Okay. Yes. I'll send it to
this you. Is Arnie Gunderson. One other item. If you when you go up on the Fairwinds site, the report is posted, but on page 15 there's a direct quote from the NRC, I'll just read it. It's only two sentences. And this is in an NRC document that's quoted on the page. The staff concludes that the regulatory solution for the station blackout mitigation is implementation of new requirements intended to strengthen mitigation capability of all operating and new reactors to address prolonged station blackout stemming from design bases and beyond design bases external events to provide core and spent fuel pool cooling, what we talked about, reactor coolant system integrity, and containment integrity, another thing that Fairwinds talks about. So the staff is suggesting that as a result of this this Fukushima near-term task force, that new reactors be included in an evaluation of their fuel pools and of their containment integrity, yet the design basis or the design certification process is allowing these plants to move forward without that requirement being implemented.
Thanks, Arnie. Other questions?
Yes, we have a question from Sunny Lewis of Environment News Service. Mr. Lewis, please go ahead with your question.
Sorry, I was on mute.
Ms. Lewis,
thank you for taking my call. My question is about, I'm asking you to speculate a little bit for me about the culture within the NRC that makes them so resistant to well-thought-out objections like your own. And if they don't take account of these objections, it appears to me that everyone is going to pay a very heavy price. I don't know why they would not pay attention to what you folks are saying.
Maybe Arnie and Tom may want to comment briefly on that.
Tom, go ahead first.
Well, I'm not sure I have any special insight, but as Arnie said earlier, it's appeared clear that the end of the year licensing certification has been the schedule for a while, and that they were going to meet that above all. So it does seem logical that the NRC and the utilities and Westinghouse would want all the problems ironed out before there's any certification. But I think really what it boils down to is the utilities don't want activities stopped at a certain point at the sites. They want to put rebar in the holes and start pouring concrete, no matter if it means that there are going to have to be revisions after the design certification. And it does seem illogical that the utilities would go that route, but I think they want to continue their forward momentum. And the way the NRC is reacted to our petitions and on calls that we've been involved in, it's clear that they have some, and I would say disdain, for the public interest opinions on how this whole procedure is going, and they have not been friendly at all, in my opinion, in taking into account what we've been raising. And I think it could be interpreted actually to be helping Westinghouse and the utilities, but it's been ignored. It is rather baffling, but it's us ratepayers who are going to end up paying the cost, unfortunately.
Yeah. Arnie, what would you add to that?
You know, the COL process, this part 10 CFR Part 52 license, was designed to be a one-stop license. But the theory was you had it right the first time, as opposed to back in the Part 50 licenses, there was a preliminary safety analysis and a final safety analysis, and the public could participate in both pieces of that. Well, the industry didn't like that and again got this one-stop process with just this COL, and after that there's really no public involvement. What we're suggesting is that, you know, there's a need for public involvement before the COLs are issued, which is exactly what the process was designed to accommodate. But yet the NRC isn't allowing the process to accommodate those changes. So basically, the public intervention was limited to one block of time as opposed to two back when the first generation of reactors were built. And now that we have one block of time, the NRC is still preventing public participation even during that block. On the website, we have a long history of the NRC doing these things. But let me just add that Commissioner Merrifield was, when he was a commissioner, he was looking for work in the nuclear industry, and the Inspector General found that that was an inappropriate use of government time. But he took a $1.7 million job with Shaw, who is the contractor at Vogtle. And before he left his commissioner role, he was one of the commissioners who voted in favor of this extended limited work authorization on the Vogtle site. So there was definitely a conflict of interest with Commissioner Merrifield, because he basically voted in favor of his the company to which he was going to work, as opposed to in the public's best interest.
Okay. Good. Let's move to the next question.
Again, if you have a question, please press star, then one at this time. We have no further questions. This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to management for any closing remarks.
This is Jim Warren with NC Warren. I'd like to thank those of you who participated, we are all available to answer further questions. Again, the report, the legal motion, and our live on the Fairwinds site and at ncwarren.org, that's fairwinds.com. And ncwarren.org, and also about a 15-minute video presentation by Arne Gunderson is, I think, now live at both of those sites as well. So
yes, it does. See, it is live, Jim.
Okay. Feel free to contact any of us with follow-up questions if we can help in any way. And thank you again.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.